Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everybody, welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Rachel Shackleton.
All right.
And Ash Millman.
Hello.
Now, I didn't want to just do a what we play in type thing, although we are going to do that as well. But I thought I would twin that with a sort of wider discussion on open world games and linear games, because between us at the minute, Rachel's been tackling World of Warcraft Classic.
Well. I played 15 minutes of it last night before I realised that it takes 2 seconds to cast a spell. And and I decided to wait until tonight, where it's hopefully going to be a little bit less.
Okay. Populated. But we can still use that as a leaping off point to talk about the
I played it 15 years ago.
Yeah, there you go. For like a few thousand hours. Ash has been tackling Man of Medan.
Yes.
Which by the time you guys watch this, the embargo will have lifted and it's all legal to talk about it.
Yes.
And I've been playing Control, which is Remedy's new thing. The people that brought you Max Payne, Alan Wake, Quantum Break. So yeah, I kind of just wanted to have, because it's weird. As soon as I booted up Control and that game just goes. It just lands full ground sprinting, and it's just kind of like, here's the narrative, just go.
It looks so good.
It's brilliant.
It looks so good. I'm glad you're enjoying it.
Mm-hmm. Like. It's great. I mean, we'll get to we'll go game specific in a bit, but I kind of just wanted to talk about like that differentiation between the appeal of open world stuff and linear stuff. And because, like I said, with Control, as soon as that kicked off, I was like, I love a video game when it just goes. I don't need to worry about like crafting components and, you know, something that takes 15 hours to kick off. So yeah, my opening question was just like, do you guys, which one do you prefer? If it was like a gut reaction thing, do you tend to go to something that you know you're going to play for a long time, or that approach of I'm going to finish this in a handful of play sessions kind of thing?
I like both, but I much more gravitate towards a game that has like a very finite, clean story.
Is that because you're a busy woman?
Yeah, because I'm a busy woman.
That was Scottish. Like,
Was it really? Was it really?
Well.
But no, like for me, like I work obviously all week and then I do streaming and stuff. So I'm just like, I want something that doesn't take too long to finish. Mm. So that's the camp that I'm in at the minute. But then I do play a butt ton of World of Warcraft and I replay Dark Souls every 5 minutes. So I do like games that are like huge in open world as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I like getting lost in something that's massive in open world. But I think there's a weird thing because hardly any games advertise like how long the onboarding thing is. You only kind of find out like way after the fact, where like something like Final Fantasy 13, it's like, oh, it takes like 12 hours to kick in, or like Assassin's Creed Odyssey or like whatever.
Yeah.
And it's like these games that you need to know that going in, there's like a cushion before you actually get to the game itself. What do you think overall?
Personally, I used to absolutely espouse my love for open world games. I used to love...
Dropping a spouse into a casual podcast.
I used to love them. Obviously, I talk about all the time loving Elder Scrolls and being well behind that sort of open world game. But big buts. The genre is just a bit dead for me now.
Right.
I personally feel like I've invested so much time in like those like single games that are so massive and wonderful and give you all this stuff that I just can't handle them anymore. Like Red Dead Redemption 2 was my point where I got to. I was like, oh, I don't like open world games anymore.
In terms of like just like, because there are so many possibilities for things to do in Red Dead 2. Is it just like,
exactly.
I'm never going to get to all of this. So,
yeah, I was overwhelmed with it. Andromeda killed it for me. And then Red Dead Redemption 2, I really enjoyed the game, but like got through it and was like, there is so much stuff and I want to do all of it. And my little completionist heart is beating, pounding. It's the blood pumps through me, but I'm not going to be able to do it without sticking to it for 6 months. And there's so many games that I want to be able to play. So now if I can play something like in a day, like an 8-hour game, where I can just like sit down, like lock in and play it for 8 hours or like 10 hours, 20 hours. Perfect. Absolutely my jam.
I tend to like, because it's weird, like you talk about like you think about the Hollywood influence on games and like that idea of like, you know, doing proper stories, three-act structures and whatever else. Like I like that. Like you said, like I like being able to sit down and know you're going to see credits. I don't know if you guys do that when you're buying stuff, if you're like, I'm never going to finish this kind of thing.
It does influence what I buy and don't buy, because for the longest time I was like, oh, I probably won't even bother with Red Dead 2.
Yeah.
Right.
I only ended up getting it because Mike wanted it.
Right.
Like, so I was like, we ended up getting that. But like I personally was like, it's too big. There's no point. I'll never get to the end. I've got no time.
I'll never skin all these hogs.
Yeah. No, like...
There's a lot of hogs to
There's
skin.
A lot of hogs, a lot of skin.
A ton.
Your horse can only carry so much, you got to go back and forth, carry all the hog skin.
But yeah, something like Red Dead 2, I mean, they, like, Rockstar doubled down on that stuff, like, so much, where it's like, you could spend, like, a couple hundred hours just in the opening chapters.
I think when you mentioned Skyrim there, you kind of, I wonder if it's because Skyrim for us was our first big, like, holy crap, let's get absorbed in this. So we're sort of, like, burnt out on it. But the generation slightly below us, maybe Red Dead, this is their thing. And like open world games still have like a massive appeal and a massive like potential to be everyone's game. Like for every individual young gamer, that could be their game. Whereas like I think Skyrim was ours.
Yeah. Or Oblivion was the like starting point. 100%.
And then of course World of Warcraft as well.
I think a lot of people remember that first game they like fully got lost in.
Yeah.
Because it's weird to talk about like Skyrim. Like it was only when I played Skyrim, I sort of like, or any game like the big sort of fantasy thing, I tend to like imagine a character from the ground up and I play them as a completely like separate entity. Whereas like when I bought Skyrim for the 50th time on Switch, I was like, I'm actually going to play it like me.
Yeah.
Like what would I do in this scenario? And it still kind of contextually fits or whatever, but I don't know if it's the same with it, like you guys approach it. Cause I was like, oh, like what would I do if I was living in this village? Like, oh, I might go and like try and smith something and take like a really easy quest from someone. I'm not going to go and kill a giant, but I'll do bit by bit.
I tend to kind of do that in every single game I play where
like,
as me. And the way I play these type of games is like, right, how can I get as powerful as possible in as short a space of time? Like that is how I've been playing
smithing
Skyrim
daggers.
As well. Actually, there's something in that as well. You said about getting Skyrim on the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
I have given Skyrim the longest chance that I've ever given it since I got it on the Switch, and I can pick it up and put it down super easily. So I think there's something in that with open world games for me. But playing a character, I always tend to do the same thing. I'll always be a good guy or girl, and I'll always try and get ridiculously overpowered.
This is because basically I was just going to talk about like infusing storytelling into open world stuff, because when they are so like disparate and open ended, like it's easy to just mess around in them. Like they can be big sandboxes. But does that mean you've never played Evil Shepherd in Mass Effect?
Nope, I was Paragon.
Out.
I was Paragon. Actually, I wanted to bang Gaddis, so I did have a bit of renegade in me because he doesn't like you if you're pure like good. You have to have a little bit of nasty in you. So I punched a reporter a couple times, and Gaddis gave me a little smooch. But that's about it.
I think that idea of sort of like, I think you were going to say something before about like the way that you play open world stuff. Whether you play a character. Or
completely
not.
Agree, but on the opposite, I always play as a dickhead. I always play as you then. Yeah, literally, I play as the most. Exaggerated version of me possible where I'm like in real life where I'm like, oh yeah, I can't really say that, but getting the game I'm like, yeah, screw you man, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna kill all your chickens, like I get in, I proper like I turn into like 12-year-old boy, I'm like right. But I always play it how I want to play it. Like my version of Mass Effect, if we're going with that example, was always I was Paragon to all my friends and then Renegade out, so Paragon in the sheets, Renegade in the streets. and that was the way I played it, and I feel like that's how like I would like I would want to be, how my like fantastical image of myself would be like in these games. Like I like doing it that way, but I guess that is kind of playing a character rather than pure this is me in the game,
because that's what I was thinking. Like as games have gotten bigger and like, you know, like I keep citing Assassin's Creed because for me that was like the tipping point of Ubisoft going like, we're going to put all this money, all this time and R&D and everything into making the biggest play space ever, and no one will ever see every inch of it, but at least people can play it for thousands of hours. And that kind of like held true, like Odyssey is one of the most played games in the last few years. But like, yeah, do you kind of find that you need to, like, how much kind of drive do you have when you play these kind of games? Like, can you enjoy the mechanics? For me, I need a reason to keep going, which is that's why I gravitate more towards linear stuff.
With open world games, the reason I've gone off them is because I have the mainline story that I want to get through, obviously, while you buy the game and driven to. But then everything else I pick up, I want to complete. I want to see everything. I want to do everything. Like, I'm driven to every point of the map, and it exhausts me.
Right.
And it wears me out. And I think that it's wonderful and great. But then you get faced with so much filler and not enough killer, as I was saying earlier.
I was going to say the opposite of Sim 41.
You get faced with all the filler and you're like, this is put in here to pad this out, and I'm still going to do it because I'm a little podcast friendly word, but like
consumer.
Yeah, yes. I'm a little consumer of the content. But yeah, so I will still do it all, but it will grind on my patience. I always find I need a break from a game, like from just gaming after I've done an open world game. Like I'll get through an open world game because I will have put all of my time, effort, energy into trying to see everything. I need like a week off. I'm like, oh no.
You don't have the same thing, Rach, in terms of like main content side stuff and everything.
Yeah, totally. I feel like there's everything needs balance. I love games like this. I love just playing. I played Spider-Man for a good few sessions where I literally just swung a boot and got all the collectibles.
Yep.
So I guess that kind of counts as like open world kind of. But then I also love just having a 3-hour window where I can sit and play an indie game and play it from start to finish. So I think it's good to have it in balance because both are very good.
I tend to, with something like Skyrim or any sort of game that's like massively open world, but they still give you like a main story, I'll always clock the story and then do the side stuff.
No,
divides people because like, I can't remember, I think I was talking, was it Josh? Someone was playing Days Gone and they focused so much on the side stuff and clearing out the encampments and the different sort of gang hideouts and other zombie places and everything else that they like kind of exhausted their time with the game. So by the time it came to the more design stuff, they were kind of like, oh God, I've already played this for like 80 hours or
whatever. That sounds like me when I tried Assassin's Creed Origins.
But like that's the thing, like trying to find the balance. Like, do you guys, this seems crazy to me, like doing main and then a little bit of side and then back to main.
No.
Do the main course first.
You do main a little bit of side. But what happens is you do main up until 3/4 way through, complete all of the side quests and then do the ending. And then if I've finished a main story, I'm done with that game. I'm done.
That's the last thing I do.
Yeah, I put it away. Like,
that idea of taking a huge break though, does that not break the like propulsion, the momentum
of the
story?
Well, the thing is, I've seen this and I've got two examples. One's Breath of the Wild, the other one is Horizon Zero Dawn.
Sure.
I don't want to finish them. If I'm really enjoying a game, when I get to the point where it's like almost done and I can sense it's almost done, I deliberately put off the main quest. I don't want it finished because when it's finished, it's done.
Over. See, whereas me, I'll get it done and then assume that there's an end game. Like sometimes I'll Google it to make sure I can actually keep playing when it's done. Mario 64, which is a ridiculous example, but I just finished it this weekend, 33 years later.
Did you get 120 stars?
I got 70 and then I beat Bowser. He can suck it. He sucks.
Definitely get 120 stars.
Bowser, right? If you haven't played it, he pops up. I mean, I know everyone knows this, 1996, but he pops up and he's like, oh, get 50 stars and you can fight me for the last time. I got 50 stars. He's like, actually, I was kidding. It was 70. I was like, what are you? I know you're evil, but good Lord, I had to go back and get 20 more. But yeah, it's like, it's.
I would never have been in that situation though, because I'd have gone there with 120 stars. Exactly. I've been like, excuse me, Bowser, what are you talking about? 70, I've got 120 out of my pocket. Here
the
you go.
The tipping point
Chuck
with
it at your
that
face.
Stuff was the flags in Assassin's Creed, like the very first Assassin's Creed, when it was like, oh, there's 20 flags in each zone. And I was like, that's 20.
Feathers.
I'm not ever going to get.
Is it feathers as well?
Feathers? Yeah, I think they ended up doing feathers. GTA 4 had the pigeons. It's just like random little things that for me always felt like padding, whereas you guys shot them all up.
I don't know. It's like I was returned to God of War as my perfect game. The God of War 2018, the perfect game, because it balances linear narrative and open world story into one perfect package where it's as big as it needs to be so that you can pad out your gameplay and go and like find little collectibles and see some side story, learn some lore, have a good time. Mm-hmm. And then the main story is so well written and everything that you're still driven along that.
Have you played that more since you hit credits?
No, because I planned it and I was like, I've done everything.
Right. Because I was going to say, that game is the perfect example of, I guess it satisfies all of us, because when you hit credits in that game, not massive spoilers, but the way that story goes, it definitely propels you to keep going. Like, you know, you are Kratos and Atreus. Yeah. You have, you know, there's a reason that you guys, like story-wise, you should keep going. Like, I like that they roll together the mechanic side of it with like the story itself. But I guess that's not always the case for some stuff. It depends how it sort of ends.
It's one of the few ones that I like finished the main story and then was like, I'm going to get all the collectibles because I thought that it was really well, and the Valkyries and stuff, I thought it was really well balanced. I just think the perfect game. Perfect game size. Like, it actually is.
Some might say it was game of the year.
Yeah.
It definitely was game of the year. It was a damn good time. Now, I threw in here, before we get to the game specific stuff, ludonarrative dissonance, which is the most, I can't say the word, it's the most pinnickety term.
Yeah.
But it came out of GTA 4 back in 2008. The idea that, like, the way Nico is in the cutscenes, you can play him in a way that betrays the way that his character comes across in the cutscenes. The example being that Nico says he doesn't want to kill. He doesn't want to kill now that he's come to America. He's trying to live a better life. But in between the cutscenes, you can just go on a rampage and do whatever. Yeah. And then even in the next cutscene, he'll still be like, I didn't want to kill anybody.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, you kind of broke it. That kind of thing, I think, is interesting when you start analyzing stories in open world stuff. Have you ever clashed with that? Or you kind of thought like, well, my character wouldn't do that. Or like, I should play into this sort of role.
Depends
on the game.
The Witcher is probably the best example of that, because I feel like Geralt and the Witcher series as a whole, because of Andrzej Sapkowski.
I used to always think Anders Edge, because it's spelt like Anders Edge.
He has a really set vision for who Geralt is and what he does, and obviously he has loads of novels as like backstory. But the way I wanted to play him was a lot more like, I don't know, it was just different. Like, Yennefer's his, like, his wife. Mm-hmm. Like, that's his love. Mm-hmm. Who he's like supposed to be with and everything. Whereas I was like, I wanted to go after Triss. I wanted to do other things. I didn't care about some of the things that Geralt would, and I played him in the way that I wanted to play rather than the way that I thought Geralt would play. I don't think it came across in the cutscenes quite as heavily, but I personally felt a little bit like of dissonance between the two. Mm-hmm. So like, oh, I know the way that he should be and how Geralt is, but this is what I'm going to do with him instead.
Yeah, I think it's like it's that. Do you have the same thing, Rach? Like that split between gameplay and story.
I'm trying so hard to think of an example, but I do know what you mean, especially with the GTA example. But I'm sure there's something I just can't think.
It's weird because like Rockstar are the ones that do it the most because obviously their games are rooted in like crime fiction. So like even in Red Dead 2, like Arthur has that little journal where he's always writing about like, you know, I was brought up and I'm trying my best to be quite peaceful, and like his entries do change depending on how you play. But like there is that sort of idea of the game is serving you up a character, but trying to write someone that would make sense like with open world chaos in as much as they're also trying to deliver something. I always think for Mass Effect, like Mass Effect 3, I always thought was really weird because it's like you're trying to save the galaxy and like, you know, you have this sort of driving force to do stuff in the cutscenes and everything, but then in gameplay you can just go and do all the fetch quests and just kill time, and like for me, like things like that kind of it kind of breaks the immersion. But I think that's one of the risks that they run with like more open worlds.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
But yeah, we can get on to some game specific stuff. Let's talk about Man of Medan, because me and Rich don't know that much about it, but you've been playing through it.
I know nothing about it other than that it's the Until Dawn guys, and I'm already sold.
Like, that's my thing. I know it's Supermassive, and that's all I know.
It's Until Dawn guys. So basically, it's the first part of their Dark Pictures anthology, which is going to be a yearly running thing where they have a new horror story each time. Mm-hmm. And it runs in the same sort of way as Until Dawn, where you've got this like overarching kind of like a framing device where you go in, there's a man in a library who's like, okay, we're going to look at this story, and this is how your story's been
cool.
And kind of gives you like
the Twilight Zone
kind of, yeah, it's very Twilight Zone. Okay. and then you go into the narrative, which is a bunch of friends who are on a boat and they're looking for a sunken wreckage that they can go and find Manchurian gold, which they think they're going to find some treasure with, and that's the setup for the narrative. And then it works in the same way as Until Dawn, whereas you play as each character, the game will slip you in and out of each like persona. Mm-hmm. And you have conversations, decide how they're going to be, how they're going to react to things, and make decisions on what they're going to do. So you're, so you're faced with like quick time events where you have to get through, otherwise you might get shot. Right, you might fall out your boat. Like other stuff happens that might happen. But if people might die, people might not die. And you've got to try and get through the end with everyone surviving. Mm-hmm. And it's... it's very much a linear story, but
it sounds very focused.
Branching pathways, mm-hmm. so you can play through it multiple times and get a different ending every time. But yeah, that's basically the setup mm-hmm. of Man of Medan. Until Dawn, I've said God of War is the perfect game. Until Dawn is my favorite game, I would say, because just the way that ran was so impressive. Like it was a perfect combination of film and game, mm-hmm. and I feel like they've taken that template, smacked it out again. It's not as good as Until Dawn. It's not as good as Until Dawn.
Ooh.
Which is...
what is, though, you know?
Yeah, I wanted it to be better. Mm-hmm. Until Dawn, like you're saying, is brilliant. It blew me away. But then I replayed it a few times. 5 times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kept failing. One person died right at the end. And it does have this thing that just I can't get out of my head. And it is the fact that, like, you can... fail. People have specific moments when they can die. Mm. And if you can fail all the quick time events you want, but if it's not their time, they won't die. And it just completely took me out of the immersion. There's this whole section where Mike is in the asylum with his dog, and you can fail every single quick time event and he won't die.
You'll be fine until the specific one.
The dog dies though, which is horrible.
I guess it's so, I was going to say, it's like the mechanics of it. Like you start seeing the strings kind of thing.
Yes. Like, yes, that's what it is. So I wanted Man of Medan to have way more branching, but it sounds a lot simpler.
I will do like a, this is going to be a full review of this. There'll be a written review up tomorrow, which is today on this podcast.
By the time you hear this. This week, yes.
Yeah, there'll be a written review up and me and Jules are going to do a conversation about it as well. But basically, I feel like this is one that shows its strings quite a bit as well.
Right.
Because I played through it twice. You can do like a scene selection. So I've played through the end quite a lot to get all the different, see what happens with all different people. Mm-hmm. And there's just things that just need tightening up, refining. Right. It's stuff that can be patched, I think. But like,
In terms of like in terms of like a method of storytelling, like it's effective in terms of like you like assumingly you believe in the characters you like. There is like narrative propulsion to it.
It's wonderful the way that it plays out with like Until Dawn. You get shown a character, you get three of their main characteristics flash up on screen as the way that they are generally. So you can play as them, or you can go against their normal personality and do different things and see how that interacts with the people, which is a really interesting way of doing it. It's very much like it's like reading a book. It's literally the choose your own adventure book, and you can skip ahead and read what happens and go back and do it again. And all that sort of thing.
I like that.
Yeah, it's a wonderful framing device, and I think it works really well for games. And I think Man of Medan is the shortened version of Until Dawn as well, so it's a lot quicker to get through, which I think works incredibly well in its favor for this format of storytelling.
Right, yeah.
I wonder if they want people to have like a more specific experience, because Until Dawn is known for being this big sprawling thing.
Yeah.
But I guess with Medan, that is actually we can double down on making sure everyone hits the right points.
Yeah, yeah. Plus, you said it's first of many, right?
So. Yeah. Mm. It's a multiplayer as well, so you can do it across consoles. Mm.
Why? How is it multiplayer?
This is actually where it succeeds the best, because as much as the solo story would be what I would play it for and what I think is appealing, the multiplayer works much better because every scene is done with two characters in it. So one of you plays one and one of you plays the other, and then you can interact how you like with each other and choose like run away and leave your friends behind, or you can get someone else killed and then carry on with your gameplay.
Cool.
And you see different things. Like you don't see the same things. Obviously you're playing different characters. So there's at the very, very beginning. So this is venturing into spoiler territory, but just for the prologue, there's one little bit where... You play, this is the build-up to seeing the Man of Medan ship, which is there's two people in World War II, and you get on the ship, and one of you's playing Charlie, I think he is, and the other one's Joe or something like that. And,
Joe.
And one of you's in like the brig of the ship, and one of you upstairs, you've got to meet up and find each other, and then you start seeing all sorts of crazy supernatural craziness. And one of you has a gun, and one of you has a knife, basically, and there's all sorts of outcomes that can happen where you can choose to hide with the one character, and if you hide, maybe you'll get shot with this friend because he can't see you, and that sort of thing. But like, you don't know what's happening until the whole scene is played out, sort of thing.
They did a little game called Hidden Agenda, like a couple of years ago. It was like a detective, like thriller type thing, and they kind of touted that as like, okay, one of you is the killer. It's like you play with your phones, and it was like four people or five people could play at once, and then one of you would get messages on your phone telling you that like you need to like, you know, direct the conversation in a certain way. And I love that idea. I like them playing with that stuff more. It sounds way more focused than that. It sounds like they have more specific examples.
It just reminds me of how. fondly I look back and remember playing through A Way Out.
Yeah. Yes.
That kind of so like, good.
I know. Yeah, it's really, really good. I feel like that was like the next stage in like, hey, remember how good like multiplayer is? You want to play through a story with a friend and not just like go and mindlessly shoot a few guys and level up.
Plus like in A Way Out, like you know, the Joseph Farris was like, I recommend, or you know, nigh on demand that you play it on a couch. Like get someone that you care about and play it on a couch.
I like that.
Mm-hmm. It's really good. I would say the online is better than the couch because you can do like a controller passing one. But like the online version is really good and works really well. And because it's a horror game and you can't really communicate unless you like ring up and talk to them on the phone. Mm-hmm.
It's Discord's like, a thing.
Well, exactly. You know what I mean? It works really well. But yeah, I, for the purpose of this pod, I think it's a really great way of telling a story. I think that the way that Supermassive have made these games is incredible. I love Choose Your Own Adventure books. I used to read Nightmare all the time, like a freaking love Nightmare.
Oh, yes!
So the TV show, the way that they've channeled that into a game and you can, and the replayability of it, I think is really good. I think shortening that to like a bite-sized chunk that you can get through in a couple of nights or whatever is great.
Because I remember 2012 was when The Walking Dead sort of came in, like Telltale, that massive boom. Yeah. Like they'd done Back to the Future and Jurassic Park and stuff before then. Well, they'd done Jurassic Park before then, and then Walking Dead blew up so much, and then we had all these kind of like, you know, a lot of influence kind of came from them. We saw Life is Strange, and then Supermassive had Until Dawn. But I feel like right now there's only really like Don't Nod with Life is Strange, and then Supermassive doing Madan that are carrying the point and click stuff forward.
Yeah,
I'm glad they are though.
Oh yeah, yeah, and like on the scale that they're doing it. The next one down we had is the World of Warcraft Classic, which like is kind of the opposite, but like I wanted to just talk about like, what brings you back into it. Like it's that idea of building a character and doing all that stuff all over again.
I mean, the thing is, obviously, with WoW Classic is it was 15 years ago. So like first of all you kind of notice like I know like Lord. So many people though like it's this sort of thing within the WoW community before obviously they announced Classic that you'd have the nerds who were like I was one of them who's like you don't know how good you have it these days back in my day when we had to walk everywhere until level 40
we didn't even have pandas
we had ammunition
we had
oh god so WoW Classic, lots has changed in 15 years and people are sort of finding that out now. But the thing is, it's so cool. It's like, I said this earlier to the guys, I was like, it's funny, the one thing that will probably and can probably kill WoW is WoW.
That eats its own tail kind of thing.
Suddenly everyone is so like interested in World of Warcraft again and I love it. So the only thing is though, I've been playing this game for 15 years. I've got 15 years of investment on it and now I'm starting all over
I was going to say, because if you're starting all over again, do you find yourself settling back into how you played it back in like 2004?
I will be doing the exact same thing probably. Doing absolutely every single thing, just going to like random zones, getting lost and just enjoying playing with friends again. It's completely like, it's so sandboxy. Wow, because you can't do anything very fast in Classic. Right. Everything takes forever.
Does that help though? Because I mean, like that's the version that like the whole world fell in love with. Like that was when the South Park episode came out after it. And, like, that was the
peak.
Thing. Yeah, that was, I think South that was like peak Warcraft.
Well, I would actually call peak Warcraft Wrath of the Lich King. But,
Of course.
Yeah,
okay,
definitely Wrath of the Lich King. That's when they had like their 11 million subs,
right,
or something. But no, Classic obviously did something right because it sowed the seeds, and then they had the player base to then do the expansions for it. So.
But like going back to it, like obviously you got the old school graphics and stuff. But like you said that like
it looks awful.
Hey, I'm game for some old school stuff again. Mario 64.
It's so just. I mean, look at games like Minecraft, like old school graphics. Like they work. Like people can look past them. And with a lot of people, it is the nostalgia. It is the oh my god, yeah, this is what humans look so. They used to have 3 polygons for faces.
Right. Whoa.
And it's like and even just things like my quests no longer show up as highlights on the map anymore. I need to read my journal and figure out where to go for this quest.
I've gone like so like back and forward on stuff like that where like I think that the worse the graphics are, for the most part, especially when we were kids, your mind makes up the distance. Like you didn't look at it in a way that went like, oh, there's not enough polygons in that character model. You just saw them as that character and you just went forward. And like for me, that kind of, I don't know, like over time made me like love those games and like, you know, love those worlds and stuff. Like if you go back to like, you know, old school Warcraft, or if you look at like if you search like GTA San Andreas, it's like if you GTA San Andreas map from the sky or whatever, you look at those maps, those worlds, they are super small and they're quite blocky and whatever, but we remember them as like cities and worlds and realms and whatever. Like there's something about actually de-resing it that I think makes your mind make up the distance, that makes you love it even more. So which I guess works for in Classic's case.
There's something in this whole thing as well, is like the whole, what's fascinating me these days, because I surprise myself with this whole like wanting to replay games that I already know inside out. Like, why do I do it? Why do we all do it?
I just spent the weekend playing GTA 4. So.
It's nostalgia, isn't it? It's love, it's joy. Mm-hmm. But what it made you feel.
In this world where we've got Man of Medan and Blair Witch coming out on the same day next week, why am I going to be spending next month playing WoW? Mm-hmm. Oh God, it's going to happen.
It's the power of nostalgia. Speaking of which, I love Remedy, and you guys will know them from Max Payne and Alan Wake and maybe Quantum Break. Now, we have another video on the main channel that me and Josh did where I just shouted at him about how much I love this game. But I wanted to bring it in mainly because I've been playing it since midnight last night, 2 nights ago for you guys. But because it kind of straddles the line between both. It has like really over narrative mechanics, narrative presentation where the game just starts, it goes from like a cut to black and your main character, Jesse, just says, why did you bring me here? Just out loud. And I'm going to leave it as vague as possible because the part of the reason I adore this thing is that it's kind of this slowly drip-fed, like macabre horror thing. It's great. And so you turn up at this place, it's the Federal Bureau of Control, and she walks in through the front door and everything's abandoned. It's this big kind of, open office block type place. You just start walking forward and exploring, and eventually you come across a janitor who's like, oh, you must be here for the interview. And then you go through and you start talking to different people. And it's, you have that initial sort of narrative drive where you get given your name and the reason you're there. Jesse says to herself the reason that she's there. And then you sit down with it, you start finding other people in the building and you kind of get more of a reason as to what happened there. Why is it abandoned? What were these people looking into? And whatever. And it all kind of goes from there. But gameplay wise, it's a Metroidvania. And you have, it's all set in one building. It's kind of like Die Hard or whatever.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Metroidvania where some buildings are locked off with different key cards and maybe you need to get this weapon to go to this next place. So you kind of have this initial burst of it's a mystery and I need to know why I'm here and I want to know the next thing. But you're only going to really figure out the full ramifications of what's happening by going to every single location and reading every single document that's on every single wall. So for me, that's the perfect blend. And as soon as it started, I was like, oh, I've missed a game that just hits the ground going.
Yeah.
And so I kind of found myself, like I said, playing until 2 in the morning or whatever. But I guess it's just that wider sort of conversation on how do you split the different elements. For me, I love this stuff. And I love the way that they roll everything out. Mm-hmm. But I don't know when the last time was that you played something that was modern where you were like, okay, this is trying to tell a story right from the get-go. It's not necessarily too bothered about open world stuff.
I've been playing a lot of Remnant, and I feel like Remnant is kind of doing that as well. It has the people like myself who are maybe a little bit more interested in just getting straight to the gameplay can do that. Mm-hmm. And people who like to get really lost in a world and learn all about all the story and all the characters can do that as well. Mm-hmm. You can sort of pick how deep you want to dive. Mm-hmm. But no, Remnant's fantastic. Yeah.
Because I always think, like I said before, about all the Hollywood influence stuff and across the 2000s, we saw so many games that, obviously experiment with hiring actors in and doing full motion capture, and you have a lot of that today as well. But games that can just play to the medium and go here's a set of gameplay mechanics, go have fun, here's some action stuff. I think that some of that stuff is kind of missing in amongst all the massive sprawling open world stuff. I'm kind of glad to get it back. I don't know if Madame was the same kind of breath of fresh air of this is a story driven game.
It's tight, isn't it? It's just really tight. I just really like being told a story. I think the heart of gameplay is stories, it's narratives, it's being told something, it's experiencing something, and you can do that in open world games and have that to a much more intense degree because you're fully immersed in a world. Mm-hmm. But I think a story that kind of trundles along and goes hit do, 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 is Hellblade's Senua's Sacrifice. I played the most recently that did that for me, where it just literally slaps through it. And
That's a quick little side thing. Hellblade is what I thought of when I was playing Control, because it's Remedy. I don't know who's publishing this. It's 505 Games, but the way that Remedy is, it's it looks like a AAA game. It looks gorgeous. The facial animation's amazing and everything, but it has such an indie soul where it's so far up itself, and I'm totally game for that. And it's reminds you what Hellblade was, because Hellblade was this very specific story that any major publisher wouldn't have latched onto. And it's they obviously had to pitch it as we have this heavy gameplay side that's going to sell, it's going to be in the trailers, but we want this really moody narrative stuff too. So for me, I like both.
Love it.
But the one of the final things is just Hideo Kojima was talking about when he was making Metal Gear Solid 5 and with Death Stranding as well. He's once you go open world, you don't go back, and that kind of thing. So I was going to end on saying, do you think the industry should go back, or do you like where we are at the minute?
I'm going to reiterate what I said about balance. Open world games are great, and I love getting lost in them. But story-driven games are good too.
Yeah, I like a bit of both. I think I haven't had an open world game blow me away like a story-driven thing has. Like something like Celeste, or even the opening couple of hours of Control has really got me in a way that no open world game has recently.
Breath of the Wild. So good.
Yeah, you might be wrong. I might take that back. That was 2 years ago. I don't know. Breath of the Wild was a damn flawless.
Story-driven games always tend to be like, they resonate more. Mm. Whereas with like massive open world games, you'll always get a lot of people saying, oh, it's too big, I didn't do everything. Like,
when you design it that well in Breath of the Wild, when you finally make it to the castle and you know that you're prepared to finally fight Ganon and the score comes on, that might be the best thing that's ever happened to me. Yeah, I like that a lot.
And he's married.
Yes, I know. I did compare to the highs of life. You would like all the open world aimlessness to just go to the side a little bit.
I like open world games. I like them, but I can only do one every year or two, maybe.
That's what it is, yeah.
Like, and so what I want is for open world games to be AAA titles that come out once a year in a big, like, landmark events. Like, Cyberpunk is the game that I'm most excited for, realistically, and that is a massive open world game, so I'm not writing them off completely. But I need, like, one landmark event a year of them, and then story-driven games would be my ultimate preference. I do really like a story-driven game that I can get rattled through and maybe do again if I really like
it. Yeah, I was gonna say, I like the satisfaction of knowing that you've seen a whole thing through. Yeah. And it's like, if you ration it out to something as massive as like an Odyssey or like a Division or Anthem or whatever, it's like a couple of them a year is a nice balance to the stuff that's more driven. But yes, let us know what you think down in the comments below. Are you a fan of open world stuff or more linear stuff, or do you like a balance of the two? For now, this has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast, and I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Rachel Shackleton.
Thanks for watching.
And Ash Millman.
Yeah, well,
thanks for watching. Did you just welcome me?
And we'll catch you next time.
Cheers.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.